Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See, and I'm here in the studio with Stephen Thompson of NPR Music. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
Stephen and I are here because we are introducing this week's episode, which is our live show. That's right. Our live show from Howard Theater on Halloween.
It was a big, fancy, special night, diminished only slightly by the fact that it turned out later I had pneumonia.
That's true. You did, but you hit it very, very well. In this episode, you will hear us having a conversation about scary things with our friend Audie Cornish. You will hear a quiz in which we chat with the wonderful Fred Armisen. I'm just going to tell you right now, this quiz ends great.
This is a good quiz.
Lots of scary things in the quiz, too. We'll talk a little bit about what's making us happy this week. At another time, we're also going to bring you an interview with Fred Armisen that you might have heard took place at that live show. That's going to be coming separately. We will get that to you also. This is chat. It's quiz. It's happy. It's all the stuff that you know from the show. So we really appreciate everybody who came out to the show. We appreciate everybody who is listening. And we hope you enjoy it. So, Stephen, we think they're going to like this one, right?
I think so. I like to think that most of my coughing will be edited out. That's my dream.
I think it probably will be. So enjoy this live show. And next week, we're going to be back with a regular episode where we wanted to give you a heads up. We're going to be talking about a book. And when we talk about a book, we do the best we can to give you a little bit of a heads up so you can start reading. The book that we are talking about is called Challenger Deep. Challenger Deep. This is one that our lovely panelist Barry Hardiman recommended to us and that Glenn Weldon is excited about. So again, Challenger Deep is the name of the book, and we're going to read it for next week's show. So be ready for that. And we hope that you enjoy the live show, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. NPR's brand new politics podcast is where NPR's political reporters talk to you like they talk to each other. With weekly roundups, short takes on news, and reporting from every stop on the campaign trail, you don't have to keep up with politics to know what's happening this election year. You just have to keep up with our reporters. Listen and subscribe to the NPR Politics Podcast at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. We are here at the historic Howard Theater in Washington, D.C. So excited to see all of you. It's going to be a wonderful show. We have a quiz. We have conversation. We have what's making us happy, and we're going to have a great show. So don't go away. All right, our panelists tonight, Stephen Thompson. So, you might not have been able to tell from the song that you heard, but it is Halloween.
Yes.
And we are extremely excited to see all of you. We are extremely excited for the show that we're about to do. And what we wanted to do first is we wanted to talk about spooky, scary things.
That's right.
Because it's Halloween.
That's right.
So we have some spooky, scary things that we want to talk about. And the question that we posed is, talk about something really, really spooky and scary. And if we have time, we may ask all of you to vote by acclaim for mine.
Oh, all right. All right. Let's see how this is going to be.
Host privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Really. So I'm going to start with you, Thompson.
All right.
You want to talk about something spooky and scary that you brought for us tonight?
Well, I went through like every typically scary thing that we talk about on Halloween and sort of subjected it to the test of whether it had ever scared me.
Yes.
So like Dracula and mummies, werewolves,
right.
Skeletons with top hats.
Mm-hmm.
And as
didn't I say skeletons with top hats at some point when we were talking
yes,
about
what
was going to succeed zombies?
You were saying that they were going to succeed zombies
as
the next big pop culture trend. I believe it was skeletons with top hats and British accents.
Hello.
That was my plan.
And so as I was running through all those things, I was like, you know what? I actually don't find those very terrifying. What is the common thread among them? They're not real.
Right.
Oh, I see.
And so
it's going to go somewhere dark.
You know me, always bring in the darkness. So I was thinking about stuff that scared me, and it all scared me because it hit really close to home. And so I thought of two pieces of entertainment One is the Alfred Hitchcock movie Psycho, which is a
solid choice.
It is a
straight down the middle.
It's
choice.
Straight down the middle, but I'm getting somewhere with this. All Thank right. you, Glenn. This is great. Part of what is scary about Psycho is that everybody has stayed in a creepy hotel, right? It is also based on the story of Ed Gein, who was a killer in Plainfield, Wisconsin. I grew up about 40 miles from there. Ah. The other thing I was going to bring up is a book called Wisconsin Death Trip.
Called Wisconsin Death what?
Death Trip.
Death Trip.
And it is about a town called Black River Falls, Wisconsin, in the late 1800s. And the town was afflicted with all these, I think the best guess is that there was lead in the drinking water. So this book is full of photographs of, you know, like murder scenes and just all the terrors that came out of Black River Falls, Wisconsin, because the town was afflicted with some sort of madness. Why they are so scary to me is that I grew up in a small town in Wisconsin and just assumed at some point that I was going to get murdered.
Maybe you needed a Brita.
Yeah,
sure. I don't know. I was thinking of some options that would help.
That had been developed, apparently, between the late 1800s and the time that I grew up there. Yeah. So, born at the right time.
That's right.
So, Wisconsin Death Trip.
Mm-hmm. And Psycho.
Through line.
There's what? A through line there.
Yeah. Through yeah. line.
The through line is getting murdered in my hometown.
Yeah.
I think the through line is getting murdered in general.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say that, but I really only think
I'm
about.
Saying, I'm not saying it's an unusual or unreasonable source of fear.
I think being murdered is up there on the list of
fears.
I got you.
Public
speaking, murdered.
Right.
I'm just gonna
tell you right now, mine does not involve being murdered.
Wow. Okay.
You'll get to hear it.
Okay.
All right. Audie Cornish, what is scary to you?
I just went for a really obvious thing, which is the 87 horror movie Hellraiser. And so
That is a good choice.
This is a scary thing. No, your story was scary, Steve. Okay. I saw this not when it first came out. Obviously, I saw it later on a bad date, where the guy was like, let's watch a movie. And I'm like, sure, let's do that. And then it was Hellraiser.
Had he seen it before?
I think so.
Okay, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a good sign. The thing I had to look up, this is why I have my notes, the original production title of this film was Sadomasochist from Beyond the Grave.
Yeah.
A little more subtle. And the basic plot is there's like a guy buys a puzzle box, even though video games are around, so already there's a problem.
Right.
And
credibility
the box
issues.
Opens to another dimension where there are, like, bloodthirsty sex monsters. And it's one of those movies where you just imagine a bunch of guys sitting in a room and being like, you know, it would be really gross, and then doing that. And I just was so traumatized from it, because I'm not a big horror person, and at the time the reviews basically were like, this is sort of humorless on top of being really intense.
Yeah.
And that got to something that I hope maybe you guys might want to weigh in on. You're always thoughtful about these things, but I think I want my genre to have a little bit of a wink.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why I like science fiction, which is sort of wink, meta commentary on culture and big ideas of today. Huh. And sometimes like empty horror just didn't do anything for me. And I don't want to say, I know there are a lot of horror fans and I don't want to diss the things that they love, but for me, I can't make it work when it's just like do not Google image search this. I'm telling you right now. This is my warning. So that's it for me. Hellraiser. Clive Barker, 1987.
Yep.
Hellraiser.
Nice.
There's a good choice. All right. I don't like to always go last because I think that's mean of me. So I'm going to go second to last. Mine is from an episode of Alfred. Well, it used to be called Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
I thought you were going to say an episode of Alf. It's the one where he finally gets the cat.
Oh yeah. My god! That would have been so cool. I should have done that, but no. It's it used to be Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and then it was the Alfred Hitchcock, I believe, Hour, and it was an episode in like the '60s. But I saw it in like 1985, when they decided that they were going to colorize the Alfred Hitchcock introductions. Does anyone remember this happening?
Yes, right.
Okay. They decided they were going to colorize the Alfred Hitchcock introductions, and then they were going to remake these old Alfred Hitchcock stories. And there's one about this woman, and she's a horrible, horrible person, in that she's a murderer,
right. But
also for other reasons. She's very manipulative. She's a terrible, terrible lady. And she goes to prison. She's in for life. The judge pounds the gate. It's the 80s, so she's got giant shoulder pads, big glasses, mean rich lady. And she sends the judges, I sentence you to life in prison, and bangs the gavel. She goes to prison. She doesn't get along very well with anyone in prison. And then she meets the man named Doc, who works in the prison morgue. He explains to her that he's responsible for burying all the prisoners who die, and she tells him she has a plan. She's going to get in the coffin the next time that he buries someone, and then he'll go out and bury the coffin, and then later he'll come and dig her up. And then that's how she'll get free. And the way that she bribes him into doing this is that he needs a cataract operation. And so the operation has actually been approved by the people who provide his benefits, but she breaks his glasses so that he can't read the letter telling him, I just rewatched this today. This is how I know all these. She breaks his glasses, and then she says, can I read the letter? Oh, I'm sorry, they're not giving you your cataract surgery. But I happen to be independently wealthy, and I will give you your cataract surgery in return for you burying me alive.
Instead of just giving him money.
Well, yeah, but she's giving him money. But there's a backstory, Thompson.
Okay, no. Okay, that's what's the, you're ramping up the fear.
He doesn't just want money; he wants cataract surgery. So, one night, the signal is supposed to be for her that the bells will chime, bong, bong, because this prison is apparently kind of churchy, and when you die, there's a bell, bong, bong, and that's how you know an inmate has died. And so this is the signal to her. She's supposed to get out of bed and creep down to the mortuary. I forget how she got out of her cell. But she gets out, she creeps down to the mortuary, and she climbs in the coffin. So, of course, it's very creepy how she climbs in the coffin, and you watch her climb in the coffin with a dead body, and it's so gross, and she climbs in there. And then she, you know, they carry the coffin out, and you see them burying the coffin. And then you see her literally in the coffin being like, ha, 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 it's the perfect escape. She literally says, it's the perfect escape. And then she's sitting there and she says, oh, why is he taking so long? Doc, any time now, Doc. And then she lights a match and she's like, what's going on? And of course, in the coffin with her, Doc. So not only is she buried alive and gonna die screaming, which is how you leave her. Except you're looking, of course, at the graveyard, and you just hear her muffled screaming because she's in the coffin. So not only is she going to die buried alive, but she's going to die in a coffin with a dead guy who she tried to take advantage of. This made such an impression on me as a young teenager that
I mean, it shaped your ethics, if nothing else.
I was like, I am never getting cataracts. Yep. So this made such an impression on me that this became my idea of the scariest thing I could possibly imagine. The idea where she gets the match, and it's his face, and I'm like, she starts screaming. I'm telling you, it's extremely scary. You can actually Google it. The Final Escape. Nah, it's called The Final Escape. It is so scary. Mine
is
so scary.
That gets deployed quite a bit, though. I feel like I've seen more than one small screen TV show, horror show, where there's the match.
Right. Yes.
Inside the coffin. The review, huh? Scratch, scratch, scratch. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the Ryan Reynolds movie Buried?
Yes.
What happens in it? could you recount the plot for us?
Yeah. No. I think I've done that for today. All right, Glenn Weldon, what is your scary thing?
Well, when we talked about this before, in the very first year of the show, a couple months into the show, we talked about scary pieces of pop culture, and I mentioned the 1949 Disney cartoon, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, in which Brom Bones, it's narrated and sung by Bing Crosby, is trying to scare Ichabod Crane, and he sings a little song because they're at a party and people sing. At terrible, terrible parties, people sing, apparently. So,
I can see how that would be your worst fear.
And this... So he's singing, and he gets to the part, so when you're riding home tonight, that's my Bing, make for the bridge with all your might, and then this part right here, he'll be down in the hollow there, that right there, If I had hairs on the back of my neck, they would be standing up right now. There's something about that.
It's that just chord progression.
That chord progression, whatever it is, that scares the hell out of me. Now, luckily, I don't have to deal with that a lot in life, because how often do you run into Bing Crosby?
Right, well, the closest thing... I mean, I think the closest thing you have to Bing Crosby at this point is Glenn.
Yeah.
You just heard him. You just heard the voice.
I did terrify myself.
The golden voice.
Terrified myself. So,
it was eerie.
Fear that's more real for me day to day that I am surrounded by, that I cannot escape. And for this, I need a slight visual.
Wow. For the podcast audience at home.
Yeah. So, I will describe for the podcast audience at home. I am standing with my feet shoulder width apart. I have broad shoulders, so I do.
Glenn's been working out.
All right. Imagine me standing with my my arms akimbo, my hands on my hips. I'm trying to thicken my neck as much as I can. And so just imagine you are staring at me from across a field, and you just see me doing this.
Glenn is now making small nods with his head.
Is it a tick?
Little help. Those are the two most terrifying words. In the English language, if you are me, there is a park behind our apartment where rational, otherwise thinking adults play hipster kickball.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
And there's a very, very tall fence. The tallness of the fence is key to this story. It's a very, very tall fence. And every time I walk by it, it seems like the ball, it's kickball, comes sailing over and lands squarely at Madame's feet. Mm-hmm. And the first time this happened, I picked it up and tried to throw it back. Mm-hmm. Tried to throw it back. And it just kind of bounced off the top of the fence, and I had to go chase it now. So now all those hipsters turn into, like, my fifth grade PE class just sneering at me. And so I pick it up and try to throw it again 5 times.
Oh.
5 times.
Did you try and use your foot? I don't know.
Well, here's... I was just throwing it like that.
Yeah, but it's not basketball. It's just, like, over the fence.
Yeah.
Was it a...
Thank you, Audie.
I'm just saying, like, if you're working out, getting those guns, this was like pushing things.
Yeah, and I just want to point out that for the podcast audience at home, the gesture you're making to throw a ball...
is all wrong, yeah.
...is sure. like the gesture you would make to throw a medicine ball. Yeah. Was the ball extremely heavy? Was it, like, 15 pounds and you had to go, like...
It's a kickball.
The red ones that are just rubber, and then they fly like 40 miles.
The way I eventually got it over the fence, the thing that gave it the oomph, the
remember the name of the sport, mutsy. Glenn.
Thank you. And I didn't want to do this, but I did it involuntarily. As I started to throw, I could feel my foot sort of leave the ground and sort of kick back. Like I was an ingenue being kissed. By a gig young, say. The thing that terrifies me more than anything else is sports. Watching sports. Because I was the kid in right field, dreading the ball coming anywhere near me. I was the kid who just was scorned throughout my childhood for not being athletic at all. And I think. I also have this feeling, this is the reason I hate watching sports, is A, the apathy and the antipathy. Right. I've covered that.
Sure. I've seen it firsthand.
The terror, because I have this thing that I thought was unique to me, this feeling of sort of like anybody who fumbles the football, or bobbles the fly ball, or other example of thing in sports.
Right. Bad thing.
Bad thing in sports. I feel terrible for that person. But it's not for that person. It's not actual empathy.
Right.
It's this narcissism. It's narcissistic empathy, where I imagine I am that guy, that poor schlub.
Yeah.
And I gather that among, if you were to poll like a bunch of unathletic types.
Yeah.
I am not alone in this, right? This is not just a me thing.
You think you're pandering to these people.
Yeah.
But these I see nothing but svelte gods and goddesses.
Yeah. You know, the irony is that somebody's gonna beat you up later.
Yeah.
I think you're gonna need to buy beer for those hipsters and call it a day.
Yeah.
All right. I hear you. So we gotta wrap this up, so by applause.
Nobody's gonna clap for I picked Psycho in a small town scared me.
Well, maybe you should have thought of that before you picked it. All right, by applause, most frightening, Hellraiser.
much scarier than that applause.
Sports? Psycho and Wisconsin Murder.
Oh, that's sympathy applause.
Buried Alive.
Oh, all right.
Buried Alive is the big winner. We will take a short break and be right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Bleecker Street, presenting Trumbo. Who was Dalton Trumbo? To some, he was the Academy Award-winning writer who authored the novel Johnny Got His Gun and the screenplays for Roman Holiday and Spartacus. To others, he was a dangerous subversive who was blacklisted by Hollywood for his political beliefs. Starring Bryan Cranston as Dalton Trumbo, Louis C.K., Elle Fanning, John Goodman, Diane Lane, and Helen Mirren. Written by John McNamara, directed by Jay Roach. Trumbo, now playing in select cities, everywhere Thanksgiving.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. We have a quiz for our lovely guests who are here tonight. To my right are my Pop Culture Happy Hour every week pals, Glenn Weldon and Stephen Thompson. And to my left, representing, high class and quality always, Audie Cornish and Fred Armisen.
I clapped for them, but only out of social obligation.
Right. Naturally. So this quiz is about Halloween entertainments. Halloween, mostly Halloween episodes of television. Now, most of them are vintage. And I'll tell you why. I was afraid if I picked something current, it would turn out that Fred was in it. I went with more vintage television. I'm gonna start over here with Stephen and Glenn. As you undoubtedly know, in the 1989 direct-to-video film, Alvin and the Chipmunks Meet Frankenstein, Alvin is turned into a monster by Dr. Frankenstein. What does it take to restore his normal personality?
Okay.
A, Simon and Theodore sing to him with a cameo by Rob Thomas of Matchbox 20. B, Simon and Theodore create an antidote using food from the buffet at a movie premiere. C, Alvin drinks something called Magic Mickey's Miracle Milk. D, Alvin takes a vow of silence.
All right, now you know her brain.
I do know, we always say at the start of this that, like, I have a handicap because Linda Holmes is my best friend, and therefore I said that when that was true, and now I sort of more say it out of habit, really. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's definitely not A, because...
You're like this, aww.
I always like to leave them happy,
right.
A couple of them
sadness.
Sad.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. So
leave them 85% happy.
Right. So restoring Alvin's personality.
Okay. It is definitely not A because Matchbox 20 was not a going concern in 1989.
See, right there you go.
Okay.
Okay.
I feel like it's silence.
I think it's silence, really? Yeah. Not the magic milk of magnesia thing?
it was the magic milk seemed like kind of a creepy thing Linda would have created.
Yeah. All right. Silence.
I'm wrong.
Silence?
Wait. What was your choice?
Silence.
They chose the vow of silence.
Yeah. Okay,
great. No, the answer is the antidote made from the buffet at a movie premiere.
I'm just glad we're both wrong, so I'm not the goat.
It's true.
That's fine.
I admit that's a very hard question because no one would think that would be real. Yeah. Audie and Fred,
But the 1989 one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Then the Matchbox 20 one. Would have been wrong because Matchbox 20 wasn't 1989.
Right. And I immediately eliminated it on those grounds.
Yeah.
That's so. Poor question formation right
Science.
There.
Yeah.
That's my fault.
I'm excited now.
For Fred and Audie, in the seventh season of The Waltons, one of the kids experiences a series of strange and spooky things. A doll seems to come to life. Pictures move on their own. The solution lies in what epiphany? A, there is a ghost that just wants the family to say goodnight to it as they do to each other.
Yeah.
B, there is a mischievous owl trapped in the house.
C, the poltergeist is a metaphor for puberty. D,
why don't you leave it at that?
That's I know, so great. I really.
You gotta laugh.
Like mic drop.
D, the corn is haunted.
I think it's got to be the owl.
I was thinking the owl too. Yeah. It seems very Walton's. But I like the metaphor for puberty, just like on principle.
I don't think there's ever been a metaphor for puberty. That's my opinion. I don't think that's ever happened. So.
Yeah.
But the corn thing is also sort of Walton-ish.
Wait,
it's like, it's just, it's haunted.
But the corn is haunted.
But that's Children of the Corn, so that can't be it.
I mean, I'll add that maybe in the episode they did have like a sort of wink to the audience of a sort of like, you know, like maybe it was the corn or maybe it is. But I think that it feels
we
like
we should
it's
go
the
with
owl.
Our first instinct, yeah. Which is we're going with the owl. Answer.
You feel the owl?
Yeah.
No, it's a metaphor for puberty.
What?
Wait. What? Wikipedia or it didn't happen.
Like, one of the girls.
What are you saying to me right now?
These are all from Wikipedia. It's very hard to find the Walton ones.
But that couldn't.
Okay, no.
But that's not a reason. A reason isn't.
Yeah.
These things didn't happen because of the metaphor. That's too.
No. But so what happens is one of the girls who's 13 is experiencing these creepy things in her room, and eventually it turns out that she is trapped in this scary moment of whether to become an adult or remain a girl. Her grandmother says it's a poltergeist, but her mother says, maybe you need to come to terms with whether you want to be a girl or a woman, and once she does, and she makes a decision, and she becomes comfortable with herself.
And there's no, like, drugs.
And her womanhood, right. She becomes comfortable with her impending womanhood, the poltergeist goes away.
Wow.
This is apparently completely true.
Maybe it was a deeper show than I thought.
All right, Stephen and Glenn, in
yes.
the Beverly Hills...
Well, she might have been turning into an owl.
Maybe partial credit. Maybe partial credit.
I think that's worth a thought.
Stephen and Glenn, in the Beverly Hills 90210 episode Halloween, everybody else goes to a party while Brandon stays home to deal with the trick-or-treaters. What does he do that tells you he's a monster? A, he hands out raisins. B, he dresses up as regular, ordinary man. C, he refuses to answer the door. D, he tells every kid, this'll rot your teeth.
Now, there are probably people in this room who know this.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean...
Are there people in the room who know? You know, oh, this one.
Alone.
This one is like, I know!
I just assumed the Venn diagram of this show and Beverly Hills 90210 would be a little bit more than, like, just kissing.
The lone poltergeist owl. Yeah.
All right, so we got hands out raisins, dresses up as regular ordinary man, refuses to answer the door, or tells every kid, this will rot your teeth.
Okay, I think it's regular ordinary man. What do you think?
I was thinking this will rot your teeth.
No, it's too on the nose.
But, I mean, that's like what like a D-bag would do, right?
Yeah.
Like, rah, rah, rah.
It's not, he doesn't answer the door because then he got no story.
Right.
So, right.
I mean, it could be. It could just be like he did something else.
All right.
And it was a B-plot.
I went with you last time. Go with me this time.
Let's go with you.
All right.
What are you going with?
B.
B. No, he hands out raisins.
And what I love, once again, is that we were both wrong. I don't think any of us have even gotten close. Like, not 1, 2, 3, 4 people in the process of deliberating any of these questions has ever entertained
the notion. Settle down. Fred made a very good argument for our partial credit.
He made a good argument for partial credit.
Which is going to put us over in the end when I'm doing my victory dance. So I just want that to be clear.
I mocked the real answer. That gives us less of a point. I made fun of the right answer.
I know, you're new here, but let's go with the... You've argued for points for us. Let's stick with that argument.
But here's the actual trick to answering these questions, since we're now 0-3. I'm going to give a little hint. The hint is, why'd she write a question about this? Because it's puberty.
Right.
All right.
Because puberty.
Fred.
That's why she doesn't.
Fred and Audie.
By the way,
this is another one.
I don't know about you guys. When I went through puberty, my body changed. I had acne, and my voice changed.
Right.
That sounds weird.
Yeah. Did anyone go through this? Anyone?
And there was an owl, which sounds really strange.
And then there were poltergeists.
And there were poltergeists.
So, Fred and Audie, in the Gilligan's Island Halloween episode, Ghost a Go-Go, one that I'm also thinking there might be someone out here who's going to know the answer to this question. What Gilligan thinks is a ghost turns out to be what? Is it A, a Russian spy trying to secure offshore oil rights?
Wow, so specific.
B, a hockey player looking for fresh ice. C, a giant exotic bird being chased by an ineffectual scientist. Or D, a rogue military robot.
And what was C again?
C was a giant exotic bird being chased by an ineffectual scientist.
I think it can't be anything that would have helped them off the island.
Okay.
Right, that's true.
So, like, no, I'm trying to think this through. So, like, the Russian with the oil, I mean, that person might help them.
So it can't be, like, a travel agent.
He might help Mr. Howell.
The other thing is,
he might have connections.
How, like, Russians and oil was everything in the 60s? You know what I mean?
That
like,
wasn't a thing yet,
I don't
maybe.
Think it was. And also, okay, we work for a network, right?
Okay.
Our little comedy show, Gilligan's Island. Do we want to be doing stuff about Russia? Are we, like, wanting to get political? We have, we've got a list of guest stars. We're like, hey, this guy does a good
robot
or a good, whatever, mariachi guy. How do we get him on the island? Like, we've got to figure out, somewhere in there, I think.
So, wacky scientist chasing a bird, a robot, and what was the second one?
A hockey player looking for fresh ice.
Oh. That just
filibustering
seems...
will not save you.
No, we're thinking it through. You may be confused given your earlier answers. What are you thinking?
I'm confused about the bird one because what do you mean a professor is chasing a bird? They have a professor.
No, but that would make sense because, like, Gilligan would hear noises and be like, what's that? And then someone would chase it and it would be a whole plot. It could be that's a whole episode.
But who's this professor?
The professor never really did anything.
But are you saying there was another professor that was chasing this bird around?
Yeah, a different scientist chasing the bird around. Yeah.
You know, I'll leave it to you.
Oh, no, Sarah. No, I just talked all the smack, and you're supposed to come in and say the answer.
I've been so wrong. I was so wrong before. The hockey player seems weird because it's like, why isn't he with a team? That equals, disaster or tragedy,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Like, where's the rest of your team? They drowned.
You just took it to a really dark place.
But I'm saying, that's like, you can't have a part of a team where there's one member of the team.
Okay, I'm gonna wrap this up. I think it's the robot, because if something went wrong, they'd still be stuck on the island. Whereas everything else, there's a person involved.
Great. Uh-huh.
Our answer is robot.
No, it's the Russian spy trying to secure all
we are talking maybe Cold War era, but still.
Here's the thing. Like, when we did our show at the Bell House in Brooklyn a little over a year ago, there were 2-0-0 ties in quizzes that I gave.
Yeah.
And I really, really tried to make these answerable questions. I feel like I'm
failing.
I think
there were geopolitical, conversations going on at Gilligan's Island.
I feel like I'm failing. All right.
It's basically no different than if the answer was E. Yeah. Every time.
Stephen and Glenn.
Yes.
In a 1977.
Wait, we don't have to listen to her. Why don't we do our own? Let's do one where we get the answers. We don't have to do this.
We're gonna start a super group.
Yeah.
Squeeze her out.
Do not.
Stephen is. Stephen and Glenn, in a 1977 Happy Days Halloween episode, Fonzie has to stay in the children's ward and have surgery. He tells the kids a ghost story, and ultimately it helps him learn to be brave himself.
Okay.
What is the episode called?
Ah.
Is it called A, A Cool Customer, B, Fonzilectomy?
Pick that one.
I want that one. I want that. I want it to be that one.
Yeah.
C, You Give Me Fever. D, What's Thumbs Up, Doc?
Oh, that's really torture.
That's bad. Yeah, that's rough. That's rough. Let's keep a couple things in mind.
Mm.
One, it absolutely does not matter.
Yeah, there is that.
We end up choosing because we will be wrong.
Uh-huh. But consistent.
but consistent. I'm going to go with fonzillectomy, don't
you think?
The thing is, here's the basis. I feel like Linda Holmes gave us a clue.
Ah, right.
When she said, when you think about the answer, think like why I picked it. And I think she went through and looked at Happy Days episodes and said, fonzillectomy.
All right.
And went and just started scribbling madly.
Your forensic skills have convinced me. Fonzillectomy, it is.
Fonzillectomy.
All right.
Fonzillectomy. That is real. You can find it on Hulu. Look it up on your phone right now. Get out your phone, fonzillectomy. I'm not lying. But it's F-O-N-S, obviously, because it's like tonsils. All right. Fred and Audie, there's still time for a tie.
There's still time. I'm counting on you.
This is your final question. The Paul Lind Halloween special.
Wait,
No. This one would have known.
See, I figured he would have it on his phone. I'm not going to ask him a question about it.
What is that? What is it called?
It's called the Paul Lind Halloween special.
Who is that?
Who's Paul Lind?
Oh,
I said
it. I know.
I don't know who that is. What?
I know what this is about. You didn't think that was coming, did you?
Long time Center Square on Hollywood Squares, and Bye Bye Birdie, the movie, right?
Bye Bye Birdie, correct? He was Uncle Arthur on Bewitched.
All right. The Paul Lind Halloween special in 1976 featured guest appearances from Tim Conway, Roz Pinky Tuscadero Kelly, that is how they billed her, Margaret Hamilton, Billy Hayes, Billy Barty, Florence Henderson, Betty White, and what musical act?
Oh. This is all you. Okay. I'm going to guess either Kiss. let's see.
It's Kiss.
Wait.
If you get it.
What were the other choices?
If you get it without the choices, that's the tiebreaker.
Okay.
Yeah, there were other Starland Vocal Band was on there, Diana Ross was on there, but that's just my giving you choices.
Was Alice Cooper on that list of guesses?
Oh, no.
So
you would never have been
fooled. Kiss.
You would have known it was Kiss.
Oh, great. All right.
Yeah. What's important here is that I think Mr. Armisen should get extra points.
I agree.
No, he got it
without the question.
My takeaway is that you're winning.
I have to break the tie. I have to break the tie in favor of Fred and Audie and give the victory in the quiz.
You're amazing. I love that.
We will take a short break and be right back.
Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour comes from TIAA CREF, a financial services company dedicated to helping clients achieve lifelong financial well-being. A global asset manager with award-winning performance, TIAA CREF was founded nearly a century ago to serve those who serve others in the academic, medical, cultural, governmental, and research fields. Its investment model and long-term approach are aimed at delivering outcomes that benefit clients. TIAA CREF, created to serve and built to perform at TIAA.org.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. As you know, if you listen to our show, we end every week by talking about something that is making us happy this week. Tonight is no exception. We're just going to go down the line here. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy?
Right. Is anybody watching Please Like Me? All right. It's on Pivot, which is apparently a network.
That's their slogan.
Yeah, right. Apparently we're a thing. It's an Australian comedy, situation comedy, about a gay dude and him falling in love and wanting to be loved, hence right there in the title. I'm recommending it after only seeing one episode, the first episode of the third season, which just came available in the States earlier this month. It's great. It is so sweet. When I came out in the 90s, I devoured as many gay romantic comedies as I could, and ooh boy, the suck. Man, they just were terrible, so earnest, and you know, actors who would be hired because they had abs, and just, it's just terrible. So I swore off them completely. It shouldn't be something I like. It is very sweet. It is so twee. Ask me how twee it is.
How twee is it, Glenn?
It's so twee you can't see the fowest. That's how twee it is.
I wouldn't have set you up if you had...
I appreciate that. But it is really good. It's a single camera. Yeah, it's a single camera comedy. It's worth checking. I don't know what the first two seasons are like, but this episode of the third season has a really good Love Actually joke. It's great. It's called Please Like Me.
And you can find it on Pivot.
On Pivot.
Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Well, I have been laid up with a terrible, terrible chest cold. We actually had like a long talk about like whether I belong on this stage at all. And then I got sick.
Yeah.
He said, then rasps into the mic. One of the things that's making me happy is the incredible cocktail of pharmaceuticals that is making it possible for me to sit up here tonight. It's because I've been, you know, like laid up, like lying on my back complaining with like the laptop. I've been watching a lot of like internet videos and just going down a lot of YouTube.
For a change.
Ordinarily I'm like reading Proust, you know, in a hammock. Somebody sent me this this video from a group called The Kicker. It's like a generic sports press conference. I know Glenn is. I just feel the fear rippling off of them. The whole joke of the thing is it's all the like tropes of sports cliche. And the grizzled coach, who was identified as grizzled coach, is played by Weird Al Yankovic. Which automatically I'm hooked. I'm in. And it sort of ends, it's not really a spoiler. He throws a classic coach tantrum, which immediately sent me down a rabbit hole of watching actual coach tantrums. And some of you are no doubt sports people and will already know about these, the like, they are who we thought they were! Where it's Dennis Green like pounding the podium. Playoffs! The guy just yells playoffs over and over again. But the absolute best one, I mean, I've seen it maybe 500 times, is the coach of Oklahoma State's football team, Mike Gundy. You know where I'm going with this. And he's so mad, and the colors of the team, there's this bright orange backdrop behind him, and it matches his skin tone perfectly. And he's standing up there and he's really, really mad because somebody has written an article criticizing one of his players. And he finds this, you know, this is just a kid, you know, like, just why did you do that? And he's just like, pick on somebody else. Pick on me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
I thought you had a cough.
I've been saving up for this the whole time. I've said very little until this moment. So anyway, the incredible rabbit hole of coaches throwing tantrums.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. What is making me happy this week, Glenn? You're going to have to close your ears because mine is also sports.
Oh, again.
I have been watching tons of baseball. I've been watching the World Series. And the great thing about this World Series for me is that I'm not over-invested. I'm just invested enough. I've discovered the perfect way to watch the World Series without losing kind of my mind. Because if I'm over-invested, I get really upset.
Right.
Now I'm invested, for those of you who go back a long time with Pop Culture Happy Hour, our original producer, Mike Katziff, is a huge Royals fan, which he will be talking about on the show. And the Royals mean so much to Mike, and that's been such a painful thing for him for a long, long time. It's not New York. They don't get to win a lot.
Right.
So I tend to see the entire World Series through the eyes of like this very, very dear pal. But at the same time, I also have several friends who are Mets fans. So when it turns toward... Exactly. When it turns toward New York, that doesn't particularly agitate me.
Right.
It's not what I'm, you know, I'm rooting for Mike's team, but I've discovered the ideal way to watch sports, which is to care on someone else's behalf only. Because if I care on my own behalf, that's me watching college basketball. That's But when I care only on someone else's behalf, this is also why I started rooting for the Packers when Steven and I became friends. That's the perfect way to watch sports, only on behalf of your friends. What is making me happy this week is I've cracked the code of watching sports for myself, and that is making me happy. Audie Cornish, what is making you happy this week?
What is making me happy is kind of a serious thing, but you will know why I chose it, which is the movie Spotlight. And it is it has Michael Keaton and Rachel McAdams and John Slattery, I think. And essentially, it is a movie about the investigative unit at the Boston Globe that investigated the clergy sex abuse scandal before it became a worldwide scandal. But it does not violate
a rule
that I am constantly complaining about
the
movies, which is the woman journalist rule. In every movie, the woman journalist sleeps with her source or sleeps with, like, a coworker or someone. She's doing anything but reporting. And I don't mind that they're badly dressed. I'm okay with that. I don't mind the hair. I'm okay with that. But it's the, like, hooking up with the source that really bothers me.
Right.
Anyway, so this is a movie that I just got to say was really outstanding because a lot of it was just being in a basement with a pile of papers and being in a lot of ugly rooms and talking to really well-dressed lawyers who were kind of lying to your face and talking to really sad people in coffee shops and trying to get them to tell your story. And there's like a whole montage of just doors being slammed in her face. And you know, that's a good day. Like, this is literally a movie about the best day, doing the best kind of work that makes you proud to be a journalist. And it was fantastic. So Spotlight, I know you're gonna see the trailer and be like, ooh, that doesn't sound good. And I'm telling you to go and check it out.
Nice.
Thank you very much, Audie Cornish. Fred Armisen, do you have something making you
I'm
happy
okay.
this week?
No? For me, it's the new model of Tesla that's coming out. And every time I see any new, you know, the fact that some of the Teslas are being upgraded so that they could be like self-driving, or any news that I see about this makes me very happy because when I was a kid, I always wanted the future to look like the future. Right? I'm really happy to see things like Apple Pay and like the Apple Watch and everything. Like, I really wanted it to be this way, and then Tesla is like a good version of that. It's getting to see that all come to fruition. It's very exciting that we're in this time. It's not happening fast enough. My political problem with ISIS and all these organizations is more that they're not acting very futuristic.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They don't dress very futuristic, and
it's a real drag.
Yeah, no one, that it's a huge.
What's your position on swag boards?
Swag boards?
They're like hoverboards, but they don't actually hover.
Right.
They're just like skateboards that are just, help me out, people, you've seen them.
Are
they the
tiny
ones that are like two wheel and you
yes.
get it? Oh, yeah.
That's like almost the future, but it's just on the ground.
Yeah, but if we flash back to when you're a kid and you just had, for a moment, you saw that happening, you'd be like, okay, great. They're all sort of floating around. My wish would be more that everybody, that's the only way to travel. So that's something that every time I see news about anything with Tesla and self-driving cars, always makes me happy.
Cool.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you very
Thank
much, Fred Armisen.
Thank you.
Thoughtful answer to what is making us happy this week. That brings us to the end of our show. As always, you can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me. Wow, you guys.
always leave them disappointed.
You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at GH Weldon. Steven at I Dislike Steven. Audie at NPR Audie. Are you Twitter guy, Fred? Twitter guy?
I'm on Instagram.
Instagram. Yeah. Where can they follow you on Instagram?
Sordo Ciego.
There you go.
And also, by the way, all of you people in the audience, your costumes are hilarious. I was laughing so much, so funny. The NPR listener costume.
Yeah, it's great.
So good. Love
they
it.
They hand you those glasses when you walk
it's perfect.
In.
Oh, great. The little sweaters and
yeah.
the
I don't actually think these guys are dressed as NPR listeners. All right, we are so glad that all of you came out. We're so grateful. So I want to thank our panelists, Stephen and Glenn and Audie. I want to thank our marvelous guest, Fred Armisen, who we have cheered for and booed for and had a lovely time with. Our engineers, Brian Jarbo and Andrew Huther. From NPR, Sherry Thomas, Jennifer Longmire, Wright, Wilma Consul, Michael King, Colin Miller, Izzy Smith, Anya Grundman, Jessica Goldstein, Ellen Silva, the staff at the Howard Theater, and producing our show, the wonderful Carrie Thompson, and our producer, Jessica Reedy, who makes our show run. Some of you may have seen on Twitter that I had another event earlier today. Jessica has been holding my hand all day. She is indispensable to me and to us, and we thank her so much. Also, thanks to all of you for listening to the show and for supporting NPR. We gotta go. Thank you, you guys.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. NPR's brand new politics podcast is where NPR's political reporters talk to you like they talk to each other, with weekly roundups, short takes on news, and reporting from every stop on the campaign trail. You don't have to keep up with politics to know what's happening this election year. You just have to keep up with our reporters. Listen and subscribe to the NPR Politics Podcast at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.